Welcome to the Revolutionary Action Dance Party, produced out of CHSR FM. I'm Andrea Smith. On this edition, globalization and biotechnology. We'll be listening to a talk given in Fredericton, New Brunswick by biotech activist and author Brewster Keene, and then discuss the links between genetic engineering, transnational corporations, and globalization. Keene is a biotechnology activist specializing in food systems analysis. He is the author of 6 books, the most recent being Pharmageddon, Food and the Culture of Biotechnology. As well, he co-publishes The Ram's Horn, an internationally monthly magazine of food systems analysis. Brewster spoke in Fredericton on November 21, 2000. His talk addresses the false promises of biotechnology and the restructuring of life for corporate profit. Genetic engineering and globalization are based on the violation of boundaries and colonization for profit. And now, Brewster Keene.
What I want to talk about in genetic engineering, I'm going to go beyond the title in terms of food, because there's no magic dividing line between ourselves as an organism and the various organisms that colonize our gut or the ones outside of us. There's a sort of a continuum. And so if what we're talking about in one area, we have to think of its application in another. But one of the commentaries I try to read stuff that keeps extending my understanding of genetic engineering, and there's a book by the name of Lifelines by a British brain researcher called Lifelines. And it's fascinating because what he talks about is the fact that every organism has its lifelines, whether it's a molecule or a bacteria or a human being or anything else. And there's always a context. So as I'm doing now, sort of traveling around and meeting people that I haven't seen in some cases for 15 years or more, it's a good reminder of how, for example, my particular life has many lifelines that go forward and back, and that it's easy to forget them and not who I am. That is, who has influenced my life. In the same way that I know perfectly well that if I were to be disappeared tomorrow, there would be lifelines still going forward in terms of the people that I've known and so on. And that it's also laterally in time that I can name people around the world that are part of my lifelines of defining my life, in a sense. And I think it's sort of, so this is a good experience for me to sort of think in those terms. Because genetic engineering is presented to us as a very precise science in a reductionist context, and you can take an organism apart and you can take one piece and very precisely remove it, and you can very neatly put it in another organism, and isn't that cute? And here we have a novel life form. And if we're clever and have been clever in the act, we can get a patent on it, we can own it, we can sell it, and we can make lots of money. Now, I've kind of reduced, in good reductionist fashion, biotech to something overly simplistic, but in a sense, I think it's not a bad way to think about it. But in the course of reading, I love the crossovers of various things. And there's a French sociologist by the name of Bruno Latour that does some wonderful writing, and this is from an essay called "We Have Never Been Modern." He comes up with these wonderful titles. But I think it kind of, in terms of context for genetic engineering, it's very apt, and I've used it at the heading of Chapter 2. The chapter is entitled Moral Blackmail, and I'll come back to that. Am I audible enough in the back, anyone else? Okay, that's great. I don't mind this kind of a sound trap, but one of the things I'm more and more aware of is the number of technologies that alienate us from our environments, and microphones are one of them. And it's just amazing the number of people who think that you can't address a crowd without a microphone. democracy's got a very poor future if we're dependent on the electronics industry controlled by a couple of transnationals to have a democratic discussion. So I'm glad we don't need one tonight. Bruno Latour wrote, "Whatever they do, Westerners bring history along with them in the hulls of their caravels and their gunboats, in the cylinders of their telescopes, and the pistons of their immunizing syringes. They bear this white man's burden sometimes as an exalting challenge, sometimes as a tragedy, but always as a destiny." And I thought, wow, this really spoke to me when I was sort of thinking about how we think about genetic engineering and biotechnology and so on. But genetic engineering is amazingly full of promises. I could go into a long spiel about all these promises, but I wanted to say a couple things. I mean, if you read the propaganda, and I really have to use that word quite deliberately, but if you read the propaganda of the biotech industry, whether it was the insert in the National Post last Monday, whether it's the ads on television or the purportedly objective articles that are planted in the farm press extolling the virtues of biotechnology, they're always full of promises. It intrigues me. They're promising this and promising that. And if you look at the promises, break them down a bit, you see that there's different categories. Like the promises in the financial post, the National Post, they're aimed at the investment community, so-called. I love this word of community, but anyway, the investment community, you know what I mean about the language. That is, the biotech industry has a major job of keeping the hot air balloon aloft. It takes a lot of hot air to keep that balloon up there. That is the promises of biotechnology. And it's taken millions and millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of billions, with very little return. And in order to keep the capital coming in, you've got to have the sales pitch constantly up there, the promises constantly being made, and the gullible investors constantly investing in these promises. And so you read things, even I come back to golden rice, but golden rice is one of them. Oh, golden rice is the answer to third world blindness and vitamin A, as a result of vitamin A deficiency. And if you read some of this stuff, it's out there growing in the fields today. But if you actually dig around a little bit, you discover that it's about 5 years from even being in a clinical trial, much less commercialized. But the hype is there for the investors. But there is another side to it. There is also a lot of promises to you and me for things like more nutritious food, which, coming from companies like Monsanto, the agrotoxin companies, what does this say about the food we're eating now if what they're promising through genetic engineering is going to be more nutritious? Interesting to think about that. But they're promising more nutritious food. Well, if you boil it down to, and include human health, immortality on a full stomach if you can afford it. And you think about xenotransplants and genetic screening and, let's get rid of all the defectives and so on, and we can live longer and longer with this stuff if you're sitting on the tip of the financial iceberg, as it were. But there's another business in this of promises that's kind of interesting, because one of the things that the industry has to do is also convince us that it is inevitable. And I think I'll come back to that. Hopefully I'll come back to it. I never know, because life isn't nice, tidy, lineal thinking. It tends to move. We run into something and all of a sudden we have to move around it, or a new line of thought emerges. And that seems to me much more like life than some nice, tidy, neatly worked out thing that has to make its way without regard to the environment. It just doesn't work that way. But there's something in this, in the promises for both the general public and the investors, that really showed up in the first product, which is where I got into this stuff 15 years ago with recombinant bovine growth hormone. And that is the promise of something for nothing. And it's an interesting cultural comment on our culture, that we really think it's reasonable that we should get something for nothing. Whether it is forcing a cow to give more milk from than she would normally without anything other than a shot of this drug, or whether it's, as I say, increasing your longevity or feeding the hungry while still making magnificent corporate profits. There's an interesting sort of play there about how we think we can get something for nothing. I mean, this is what, frankly, what obviously the stock market is about, how you can put some money out there and get a whole lot of something back that came out of the blue, out of nowhere. So you know, it's called shareholder return, and if you read the business press, that's the only thing the world is about these days. Well, just to, back to the recombinant bovine growth hormone, it's been kind of interesting just to look quickly at that, because that was the first commercial product on the market, theoretically, in about 1986, all the big hoopla, and that was when we quit farming and where I sort of started looking at this stuff. And I thought, isn't this interesting? How can you, with the simple injection of a drug, force a cow to give more milk, 30% more, 25% was the kind of promises made, with no extra feed, no extra cost to the farmer? Oh, truly a miracle. Of course, you don't read about bovine growth hormone today, because the farmers in the U.S. that are using it are finding that their lifespan of their cows is severely shortened. They have a lot of health problems. The costs are increased. And you really didn't get something for nothing. But the toll taken on farmers on cows in the meantime does not adequately, it doesn't balance out the profits that Monsanto's made out of this drug in those years. And I should add that, of course, the interesting thing is that bovine growth hormone was never approved in Canada. No thanks, not due to the bureaucracy, the Food Inspection Agency, or Agriculture Canada, or Monsanto, but because of a long-sustained public protest from the grassroots that I think we underestimate when in terms of talking about resistance. The fact that beginning in about 1990, 3 years before it was licensed in the U.S. even, there were protests across the country here from the grassroots and petitions and so on, and this kind of kept up. But it took Senator Spivak from Winnipeg and the Senate of all institutions to actually hold some respectable hearings and invite the whistleblowers in Health Canada to provide a diplomatic immunity so they could come and talk about the political pressures on them to approve this particular drug. And it was kind of intriguing me to meet Shiv Chopra, who was one of the key people in that, after reading about him for a long time, and I wondered, who is this guy? He's got the guts to stand up and say, I'm sorry, I will not knuckle under, I will not change my opinion, I will not do what you tell me to, whatever you do. And I was highly interested to find that he was born in Gujarat and was a Gandhian direct activist in his youth. And it says something about understanding principle, which of course is a rare commodity in some circles these days. But he said, no, I will stand here, that's it. Thank goodness for such people. Well, the major promise we're getting now for genetic engineering is that, and this is why I use the Latour quote, the only way we can feed the world without destroying the environment is with genetic engineering. And it's always, we're going to feed the world, and we have to. That's always there, and that's construction. And that's why I say the white man's burden I find not very attractive as a promise or for this stuff, but it is as I titled that chapter, moral blackmail, and it's a very clever propaganda trick to make everybody feel that we have a deep moral duty to feed the hungry of the world, and thank goodness Monsanto and Aventis and Novartis and AstraZeneca are there to help us do that with genetic engineering, because we couldn't do it otherwise. Now, it's curious that I found thinking about this, that this growing world population about 20 years ago was considered a dire threat. Remember all the talk about population control. And how much of that do you read now? Because what these clever people have done is turn the growing world population into a market opportunity. It's no longer a threat, it's a market opportunity for biotech. Wonderful. It hasn't changed the scenario any, but it's a good way to try and make people feel bad and make them acquiesce in this project. But if you look at who's offering this wonderful miracle, you see that it's literally a handful of transnational corporations that draw ever closer together But we do have to, ask about whether these companies are really in the business of feeding the hungry of the world. If you, is that what they're about? They, too, have to raise capital like everyone else in it, and they've got to provide a return to shareholders. And I find the whole propaganda line a little bit thin when you realize that, they're offering this project of greater return to shareholders. And you can look at Weston's annual report about what their corporate purpose is, this shareholder return, or you can look at Monsanto or Ventus or any of these companies. And I just don't, I have not been able to get my rather elastic mind around the notion that the same company is going to maximize shareholder return and feed the hungry. I just, the logic just somehow escapes me. But that's the promise. Okay. The other thing is that if we don't do this, nobody ever asked if anything that was defined as a technology, whose idea was this? Where is this coming from? Who's going to benefit? And who are the losers? And it just intrigued me. I said, this is very strange. Why are we so fatalist, so deterministic? And society that talks about democracy and if you're soft of the rules and you're freedom, why this phenomenal determinism regarding technology? And I can't go into that. I want to just put that there with you for a subtext to explore and wonder about, because I haven't figured it out. I guess, I've got a lot of thoughts about it, but I haven't figured out how this got such a hold on our culture. So I don't think it's any accident that the restructuring of life for corporate profit was called biotechnology, the application of technology to life. And why it is that if you listen to Monsanto or any of these companies, when they talk about their genetic manipulation, they always refer to it as a technology. Always a technology. And I think this is very, very deliberate. These are not dumb people. They know what they're doing. And I don't think this is casual. It's far too systematic. And so if they can convince us, this is a good thing, brainwash us, to think this is just a technology, you will swallow it and say, that's the way it is. That's progress. That's the other thing then you quickly get into with determinism, is linear history. And so, if you question a technology, if you question recombinant blue line growth hormone, genetic engineering, oh, you must be a Luddite, right? Well, I'm happy to say, yes, I'm a Luddite. Hooray for Bill Ludd, Because he understood that that it was in the interest of the workers to ask some questions about this, about the cotton mills and about the technology that was going to wipe them out. What was happening? It wasn't a question of simply standing against technology. It was a question of trying to say, what's this about? What's going on here? But this is the other bit of this trickery, is that we're told we can't stand in the way of progress. So you get this technology, and technology is the means to progress. We have to move forward. Sort of the appeal that we keep hearing from the biotech industry or any of us. We have to move forward. We can't go back. Now, I'm going to Halifax tomorrow, but the next day I'm going back home. And I don't have any problem with that. I'm happy to go back. I don't necessarily mean going backwards. I usually go forwards when I'm going back. But, if you get what I mean, it's interesting how we get this language-based tricks on us and we begin to think, oh, yeah, I don't want to stand in here for progress. But I know that if I was walking on Signal Hill a couple of days ago with Father's Tool, and I went up Sunday morning before breakfast and before I had to leave, and I got to the top of the steps and the wind was blowing so hard, I figured I'd better stop, because I really didn't feel like going forward and either marching into the sea or getting blown into the sea. I was more concerned about getting blown into the sea, because I've never seen such a wind. And I thought, I think I'll go back to the inn where I was standing. And I didn't have any problem with that, morally, ethically, any other way, psychologically, but that's fitting. Let's do that. And so I think we've got to break this kind of hold and ask more broader questions about our culture and this kind of attitude. But to push this another step in terms of reductionist thinking, it really is a question of our attitude towards life, it seems to me. And in genetic engineering, and it's in a sense why the title Farmageddon emerged for this book. It was because the publisher who came up with that, the word itself, had heard me speaking a couple of times and using the term, or describing genetic engineering as an extreme expression of our culture. And so I said, what's the extreme? You're talking in a sense about something like genetic engineering as, is it Armageddon, apocalypse? What are we doing? Do we have any idea of what we're doing? And maybe we should see it and see this time we're now in our society. And biotech is an extreme expression, but also it's a revelation of our culture. So I think it's the more helpful way to think of it, to think this is showing us something that we've been trying to hide from. And really what it is, to my mind, is an attitude that I find is just too dominant in our culture, that is a hatred of nature. Go back to Francis Bacon or wherever you want to situate it, that somehow we live in a hostile, alien world and we have to struggle for our livelihood and and you can find biblical references that are pulled out to justify that kind of a position. And it's really a struggle. We're really in a war with nature. And that's the cultural context of genetic engineering.
This tank drawing a crop sprayer, and this is an ad of the Ontario farmer that appeared several times last spring. I don't know whether it was in other magazines, but it was in the internet, where this came from. But you can see it, Ontario farmer, last March. It ran a number of times, and I was intrigued because I don't know how bold you can express, here's a revelation of industrial agriculture. And it's good to note that this isn't just a tank and a crop sprayer, but of course you've got a monocrop corn down here. There's nothing else. The ground is bare except for the corn. And what it comes down to...
But it's fun to look for those ads, to look at through the farm press and see what you see that has that kind of imagery in it. It's all too prominent. But against this notion that we are at war with nature, we've developed this strange notion that like our food crops have no natural home. Our industrial crops are completely dependent on life support systems of chemicals, if you're in a dry area like where we are in BC, irrigation, or where the Green Revolution, pesticides, fertilizers, there's life support systems. And we've created a dependency in our agriculture that is really quite striking. And if you stop to think about it, we've got to be crazy to have created it, to be dependent on a food system, which itself is dependent on a life support system supplied by a handful of transnational corporations, the one I put up there before. Does that really make much sense? You've got to have this context about our attitude in order to legitimize that kind of a situation that we've created. So we end up with this construct, and to my mind, genetic engineering is just the extension of that. But nothing, we don't value the organism at all until we've improved it. So we talk about improved seeds and so on. And the alarming thing, of course, is that the same technology can be applied to human beings, and so we're moving into the era of genetic screening, of manipulation of embryos in the petri dish, and inserting, trading around, doing whatever you want, and now we're talking about stem cell therapy or germline therapy. And there are people saying, well, we have a responsibility not to burden society with defectives. And so you've got people like Lee Silver arguing that in due course we'll have the gene rich. They will have been the ones that have been all cleaned up. It's called eugenics not that many decades ago. And then you have the rest, and they will evolve in different directions so that the two species of human beings will not even be able to interbreed. And this guy is real life, Dr. Teacher Lee Silver. It's a bit scary, and he's quite serious. And we have to realize that that's where we're headed with this stuff. If we think that improving our corn crops and creating this kind of dependency and having the perfect crop is okay, then why stop there? And, of course, you stop and think for a minute, and then you ask yourself, wait a minute, who's going to make those decisions about who's a defective or who should be gotten rid of? My friend Gregor, who has no legs, says, of course, he would have been eliminated. He's brilliant. Wonderful guy. He's taught me a whole lot. It made me really think about that, And he says, if you come in a room like this, he says, the problem's not that I haven't got any legs, it's you've got stairs. And it really gets to you pretty quick and it forces you to think about the assumptions we make in a startling way. And I'm very grateful to people like that who, where I think we all owe them a lot. There's one other quote that for a break I was reading Barbara Kingsolver's book, Poisonwood Bible. Poisonwood Bible is incredible, and I couldn't believe the coincidence of reading that while I was working on the book. And there's a character, Ada, in there who is mute as a child growing up, and everybody thinks because she can't speak she's stupid. And then later on, somewhere in her teens, she decides that she'll now start talking. And you didn't realize it. She just made a choice that she wasn't going to talk. And so it suited her. And at that point, then boy, that just sent a shiver up my spine. I thought, oh man, that's really what this is about, perfection. And so what the biotech industry is offering to us is some kind of immortal perfection for a price. And what we really have to ask is, and who's going to pay the price? Who wouldn't be here? Who is going to starve so that an elite can have a pig's heart? And it's all starting with, you know, transgenic corn, no problem. Or BT potatoes, we'll have one less spraying for the potato beetle. But as Conrad said today, fine. Now what about all the other sprays you use? You know, you focus on this and say, well, we're really cleaning it up. Or Tony Hughes in Alberta comes up with a canola that's resistant to three different herbicides, all the ones that have been engineered. And nature has, in a matter of 3 years, mutated faster than the corporations could. And the answer of the scientists behind this, well, just use another pesticide, 2,4-D. Well, so much for reducing pesticides and so on. This is where we are. And I want to make one other comment here, just to bring this into the global picture now. I think GE, genetic engineering, is really wholesale assault on the integrity of an organism, on any organism. Or, to put it another way, it's the violation of boundaries. And I found that I got to playing with that one, thinking about that. This is what the genetic engineers take pride in, is that they can take the gene out of any place and put it any place else. In other words, they can define all of nature's boundaries at the molecular level. That's really what it's about. And this, and taking and saying, isn't this wonderful? Look what we can do. Apart from the arrogance and the hubris of that, we also have to we have to think of that also as a much broader cultural project. And I would say, look, think about the World Trade Organization and genetic engineering. And think about the violation of boundaries at the global level. What is globalization? It is the proclamation to anybody and everybody that there are no boundaries and we will not allow you to have any. It's a grand, the finale of colonization. We will colonize cells and we will colonize the world with our Western civilization and our power and our money and our genetic engineering and our corporations. Now that's kind of a gross scenario in more ways than one, but I really would invite you to think hard about it, because the more I mess with this and think about it, and having done so for about 15 years now, and I love having the opportunity of trying things out and see how they work out, I don't feel overwhelmed by its prospects. I'm afraid the industry has not successfully fatalized me. In fact, I think if we take this as genetic engineering as a revelation of what has been driving our culture for far too long, the domination and control as something that is good to do, then maybe we can begin facing a much more interesting question of learning to live here, along with everything else that's here. And we haven't begun that job yet. So, I mean, what better thing could one do with one's life than trying to figure out how we're going to live here? With an essential respect for every other organism, large, small, inside of us and outside of us and everywhere else. To me, that's a much more exciting project, and one that I feel quite happy to encourage other people to participate in, and explaining why we can't do this or that and the other thing, or why I have to eat this and not that. So anyway, I hope I really want to share some of my, not enthusiasm for genetic engineering, but for what I think is being opened up to us at this point. So thank you very much.
That was Richard King, who spoke about biotechnology and food systems in Fredericton, New Brunswick, on November 21, 2000. Brewster is the author of Farmageddon, Food and the Culture of Biotechnology, available from New Society Publishers. He is the co-publisher of The Ram's Horn, a monthly magazine about food systems and the biotech industry. For more information about The Ram's Horn or Brewster's books, can be obtained at www.ramshorn.vc.ca.
Hey, amigo, got no job because of free trade and NAFTA? Don't sweat it. Come on down to Crazy Carlos' colossal job market in beautiful sunny Mexico. Incredible opportunities, insane wages. Get back to work. 50 hours a week, 90 cents an hour. What a deal. How can you say no? Work for your old boss. Feel right at home. All the companies that shut down in your town are here in Crazy Carlos' maquiladora heaven. Elcan, Coke, GE, IBM, GM, Sony, Zenith. We got them all. Just like the good old days. But this time, no unions. We got rid of them. No fringe benefits. We don't need them. We're working so hard, you won't have time to get sick. How can you say no? Yes, now you too can reap the benefits of free trade. Rub shoulders with colorful, starving Mexicans. Enjoy super cheap housing, your choice, modern tin or cardboard shacks right next door to the factory. We'll even throw in a recycled chemical barrel for your drinking water, no charge. Or bring down your old camper. We've got RV hookups with beautiful views of fluorescent green and pink rivers. Your whole family will love it. We'll even find jobs for the wife and kids. Sewing in a sweatshop, 33 cents an hour for her, less for the kids. How can you say no? Want a job? Don't delay. Cross those borders today. Crazy Carlos Maquiladora Job Market. It's NAFTA approved. And don't forget your sunscreen. We'll throw in the sombreros.
Amongst the corporations who are pushing for global economy are the biotech transnationals, such as Monsanto and Novartis. The biotech industry has mobilized in Canada and has begun an aggressive propaganda campaign to misinform the public as to the safety of genetically modified organisms, GMOs as they're called, and to create the illusion that genetic engineering will benefit all people, regardless of income or socioeconomic status. Genetic engineering, we are told, will save millions of children from malnutrition and blindness due to vitamin A deficiency. This will happen through the creation of golden rice. Golden rice is a proposed GMO, a rice with vitamin A inserted that is scheduled for development over the next 5 years. What they don't tell us is that vitamin A deficiency is a result of the colonization of the South, where the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank lend money to countries under certain conditions, including forcing them to move from sustainable agriculture for local use to monocrop agribusiness for export to the North. As a result of the World Trade Organization Agreement on Intellectual Property Rights, farmers are forced to pay a technology fee to corporations who own the patent for crops. In fact, patent laws not only cover corn or rice, but humans as well. In the much notorious Human Genome Diversity Project, human DNA itself is being patented under the guise of usefulness in medical experimentation and development. Biotechnology not only fails to fulfill these promises, but the biotech industry is actively participating in the oppression and economic marginalization of all peoples everywhere, save for the Fortune 500. These transnational corporations are pushing for the removal of all boundaries for trade in the further quest for profit. Using the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, they drive down wages, privatize existing social programs such as healthcare and education, and destroy the environment, all to create an economic climate where people will work for nothing under inhumane conditions. Biotech corporations are not interested in saving the world, be it improving food nutrition or curing diseases. Very clearly, they are interested in generating capital to make more profit, and will do so at any cost. every environmental, labor, and health regulation that the World Trade Organization has reviewed, it has determined that they were illegal barriers to trade. Here in New Brunswick, BioAtlantic, a research corporation based out of Fredericton, is involved in the agricultural and forestry aspect of biotechnology research. BioAtlantic invites corporations to move their research facilities here, boasting of low labor costs, low workers' compensation rates, and low corporate tax burden. It's plain to see that New Brunswickers will not benefit from biotechnology research. Rather, the goal is for corporations to have low operating costs and a mass profit that will go into the pockets of the CEOs who can, as advertised on BioAtlantic's webpage, go kayaking in the Bay of Fundy and enjoy the low cost of housing in New Brunswick. The biotech firms have begun their aggressive propaganda campaign because of the healthy skepticism of the public, this in part due to such so-called mishaps as the Starfruit corn fiasco. Yet they have the Government of Canada in their pocket. The two arms that deal with biotechnology safety and health inspection are Agriculture Canada and the Food Inspection Agency, with mandates to regulate and promote biotechnology. A very obvious conflict of interest. These agencies co-published Food Safety NU, which states that there exists strict testing of new biotechnologies. But the fact remains that no long-term studies have been done, and that the safety of genetically modified organisms on their consumers and the environment has not been demonstrated. Meanwhile, their effects on farmers and economies and the environment are clearly oppressive. As they force us in the North to consume genetically engineered foods and be dependent on corporate technologies for our agriculture, they pillage genetic material and biodiversity from the South. By patenting DNA, the biotech industry is colonizing Indigenous people's knowledge, resources, and life itself. The resistance to genetic engineering is intertwined with the liberation of all peoples and all life from the destruction by global capital. Though hiding behind the seemingly objective science, biotechnology is a part of an individualistic and reductionist ideology that serves to perpetuate capitalism and globalization. You've been listening to the Revolutionary Action Dance Party, produced out of CXSR FM in Fredericton, New Brunswick. We can be reached at rad@CHSR.net or call area code 506-453-4985.